Hello and welcome to the unofficial Unreal Engine podcast, where we talk about all things Unreal Engine and also old, gross, bottom of the barrel Boba Tea. I'm your host, I'm Alex, and I'm very excited today to be joined by my good friend, who I thought I knew much longer than I actually do. I thought we knew each other for like years, and it's actually only been a few months. Yeah.
Yeah. Hi, Alex. How are you? I mean, yeah, we know each other actually for a long time. You know, we have tremendous amount of natural friends, you know, especially the ArcVis community. It's all like in between us. And we have like a couple of really close friends, you know, Jeff Motel, Fabio, and the rest of the gangs. So through them, we got to know each other on social media, and we got to see each other in Unreal Fest for the first time in Prague this year.
Yeah. And then we got to see each other again in Berlin.
Exactly. Exactly.
It's very cool. Well, I'm excited for today's episode. We're going to cover a very wide range of topics today. We're going to talk about Unreal Fest Prague, which, of course, is back in June. We'll talk about a wide variety of adventures we had in Berlin, including going to an Egypt holodeck exhibit, some really cool new stuff from Chaos with Project Aria. I'm just exploring the city in general. We'll talk about Unreal Engine 5.5, which just came out on Tuesday. We'll talk about what it's like being an authorized instructor. We're both gold certified, awesome educators. We'll do a little showcase of what's behind us, talk a little bit more about your work. And that should be enough to get us through a solid episode.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, perfect.
Great. And I'll try to always remember it. Please, everyone, be sure to like, rate, subscribe, comment. We're on all the different socials, usually at Unoff Unreal Pod, like unofficial Unreal Podcast. And if you want to send us an email and ask some questions, also use unoffunrealpod@gmail.com. I think it's going to be fun to do kind of a listener Q&A show coming up. Any questions you have about how Unreal Engine works, questions about any of the guests, we can always like reach out to people and ask more questions. We're here to serve you. So to begin today's session, we're going to begin with our word association. The way this is going to work is I'm going to say a word and you just say the first thing that comes to mind. No wrong answers, unless it's just some really awful curse. Like, don't say anything.
Okay. I see.
All right. You ready?
Yeah.
Home.
Damascus.
Work.
Via visual effect.
Food.
Food. Oh, burger.
Travel.
U.S.
Fortnite.
Experimental.
Virtual production.
Career.
And Unreal Engine.
Award.
Award. Oh, very cool. All right. And then some short form questions. How do you take your coffee? If you drink something in the morning, whatever it might be, how do you take it and what is it?
Now I'm trying to lose weight. So I'm taking green tea. Early in the morning, like, that's it.
Fantastic. For the record, good, go ahead. What?
No, but when I'm teaching or I have an early morning session, I'm addicted to coffee milk.
Yes, of course. So I, for the record, right now, drinking out of my nice powered by Unreal Engine mug that I got at Unreal Day over at Three Laterals office, which, by the way, just makes me feel amazing anytime I'm drinking anything from it. I'm out of my usual green tea, which is what I would normally have in the morning. So I'm drinking the only tea I have right now, which has some caffeine in it, which is meant to simulate a cosmopolitan drink, which is a little bit weird to be drinking right now. It makes me feel like I'm drinking, but it's just tea, just caffeine. Hopefully I'll be okay.
Perfect. Sure.
Next short form question. What is a piece of media, book, movie, video game, art piece, whatever, that kind of rocked your world and you'd recommend other people check out?
Piece of media that rocked my work and recommended to check my work. Oof. To be honest, something like rocked my world at the beginning of my career was No Man's School. The whole evolution that Alex Alvarez, the founder of it, like, you know, gift for the people and did for the people. He was like one of the main inspiring for me. And, you know, I came in a country that you cannot have an access for those, but seeing those online, like from Norman Workshop and Norman School, and coincidentally in THU, I got to meet him like multiple times. So, you know, like you're meeting your own hero at once. He was everything. Norman did 25 years starting CGI school, visual effects school, until now was the first beginning for me.
It's good. Love that. And of course, one of our connections that we'll be talking about today is Chris Nichols. And I remember Chris did some courses for Noman School many years ago as well. I never actually did any of the courses, but I was very aware of them as like this incredible resource for people who wanted to learn a lot of different techniques.
I mean, the cool things, they started small, but now they got to be this large, you know, school or university that now teaching them multiple and different variants. And the cool things is you got access for the best instructor of type. I mean, I'm not associated with them, but they have a, like a large influence on me. And I remember their VHS, CD-ROM, you know, back in the days when Alex Alvarez like used to teach like, you know, particle and Myers and all those stuff. Those was the first things that moves me on to start this own career.
Yeah, I love that. And then also real quick on that, again, speaking a little bit of Chris Nichols, you mentioned THU. We're not going to spend a ton of time today talking about THU, Trojan Horse was Unicorn, but this is an event that I've heard about so much from various guests on Chris's CG Garage podcast. We talked about it a little bit over in Berlin. Just yeah. So the audience has some idea what this wild event is, can you give a short description of what it is and then also your experience with it?
Okay. THU is basically not a festival, not an event. Okay. So it's a tribe. If it's a place where you have a journey and you can experience a deep connection with an artist. So basically you got 6 days where they isolate highly instructor and artists all over the world. So around 1,000 people. Nearly 1,000 people, like they got isolated in this peninsula or in Malta, wherever they are. And you got for 6 days just doing like, you know, digital art and all kind of art. And you got like, you know, meet people. And the reason that it's 6 days, because in normal cases, all the event is you hear the talks and then you have this afternoon, like, you know, session of networking and the rest is good. You have 6 days in isolated peninsula, which has nothing to do in it. So you are stuck with the people. So you got to go deeply and you got to learn about people and see people in the same journey as you or advanced than you. And the best part is everybody humble. So there is no assholes, let's say. So everybody is humble. Everybody, despite the level of experience, you got to treat the same. And nobody will got to be stuck by himself. So if you are an introvert, if you are a shy, you cannot reach people. People will reach you by itself. And so you grow up, you have this friendship and have this family go and back for it. And nowadays, for the old member, is going back to THU is not for the event or the talks or the workshop, just for the meet up with the people and, you know, to get fresh and get like this inspiration back, like, you know, to achieve your own work more and more.
I love that. Great summary. I really hope to make it over there someday. It sounds like an absolute blast. Next question. What is your favorite time of day, Norman?
Time of days. I'm an early bird, so I like to walk really early, so around 5 o'clock early in the morning. Okay. And I sleep really like early, so that's why. But my favorite time of day is like 5 o'clock early in the morning.
Yeah.
That is where everyone
working, right?
Yeah. That is where everybody is on silence and you got to achieve your own work for somebody.
I have so much admiration for that. I've tried at several points in my life to be an early bird. I just can't do it. But tremendous admiration for anyone who can. Cool. And I love the sunrise. Whenever I am lucky enough to see it, usually just on an airplane during an early morning flight where I'm forced to be up. Really. Last thing. When's a recent time you remember laughing? Just something ridiculous. It could have been you watched someone trip over a banana peel. Silly joke. Whatever. What comes to mind when you think about laughter?
Well, we had a good laughter when you were here. So
we
had a good laughter when you were here, to be honest, last month. And the show that we attended, it makes me like, you know, it was amazing. It makes me laugh from my heart. So we attended this circus, modern circus theaters. So it was an amazing show. It was something like you laugh about it. You have fun. You have real fun watching it.
Yeah. I'm nervous about forgetting to talk about this incredible circus we saw. So let's mix up our agenda a little bit. I want to dive right into some of the Berlin stuff. Let's start with that. I'll position it by saying thank you, Tank Thunderbird, who, of course, was the reason I was in Berlin and AWE and everywhere outside of Belgrade in the first place. And Tank has a background in circus. And so I told Tank every time I'm in the city, I try to go to some kind of live performance whenever I can. And in Belgrade, I got to go see my friend Jelko, who I worked with a restaurant at many years ago, in a production of kind of a Quentin Tarantino-esque, almost like Reservoir Dogs, like a bunch of criminals who were bad at being criminals. The whole thing was in Serbian. And that was fun, of course, because I didn't understand any Serbian. Also saw Swan Lake in Belgrade. And then over in Berlin, I said to Tank, like, I'd love to see something similar here. Just that feels cool. And like, I'd only get to see in Berlin. And their recommendation was that we go to this contemporary circus. And I didn't really know what that meant. I thought, well, like, are there still going to be elephants? Is there tightrope walking? Is there, you know, lots of festivities and music? And that's not really what it was. I mean, how would you describe what it was that we saw?
I mean, weird, because it feels like, you know, the station feels like, you know, a stand-up comedy. You have this small stage and you have, you know, those chairs and people look at it. But in this small stage, you got like 10, like, expert performance to do, like, you know, live circuit and just to catch up, you know, the attention of the people for the rest of 2 hours. So it was an amazing experience. Weird new experience, okay, in this small area, but it's still one of the best. Yes.
It was called, the venue, I think, was called The Chameleon, and the performance was called Wolf. Not to be confused with the Brad Pitt and George Clooney movie. And there was a lot of moments where, you know, you really feel the audience interaction because they're staring at you in this almost like very predatory way. Like, you feel kind of this like alpha male dominance thing going on. It's like, don't worry, you're in charge. I'm sure all of you on stage could kill every one of us if you wanted to. They just have these incredible feats of strength and flexibility and the way they would jump and flip and hit the ground incredibly hard. There were probably hundreds of us in that where I thought they were going to die. Go ahead.
No, I mean, because it was so close to us, you got to feel, you get to experience what's happening on the stage. And we got on the first row and you know, you hear the hit, you hear what's happening in there. And you're, when they flip, you're afraid that they flip to nearby you. So it was a cool experience.
Yeah, really incredible. And it was also great. We got to chat with one of the performers afterwards, and he was saying, like, as we're wondering, like, what happens if someone gets hurt, or what if someone gets sick? Do you have understudy? Do you have backup? And it was like, no, there's only 10 of them, but they have a rehearsed version of the entire show that works with 9 people, 8 people, 7 people. So they can have a number of people who are out of commission for any reason. And if, let's say, someone gets hurt in the middle of the show, they can switch on a dime to that, you know, 9-person show, for example, and not miss a beat. So they very much embody the spirit of, like, the show must go on.
Absolutely, absolutely. But what was weird also, like, our CGI brain, like, you know, analyzing this, or if we can have, like, emotion capture from all the shows, or like, use Move AI and get all the data, because you have, like, a freakishly good performance and that you can use it for any kind of games or any kind of cinematic movie.
Yeah, and I was thinking while we were watching them, of course, how amazing it would be to capture it through motion capture or VR 180 video or spatial video, for that matter. I did capture a little bit of spatial video just at the end while they were bound, but it was so funny that the performer who we hung out with afterwards, I showed him, of course, the Apple Vision Pro, and I had him take a peek at the parkour video that Apple produced in there, which I think takes place over in Paris. And he puts it on and he's watching it and he's like, oh my God, so sharp, blah, blah, blah. But then very quickly, he's like, oh, I know these guys. Like, I've done parkour with them. Like, of course he has, you know, small world.
Absolutely.
All right. Let's stay in Berlin for a second. So the first thing we got to do in Berlin together was we went to this event that Chaos was hosting. It was at the Visual Effects Society in Berlin, over in a venue called the LED Cave, which, surprisingly, tell me if you were familiar with that venue before, because I spoke to a lot of effects people.
I was familiar with this event. We had like, not an event. We had like a private workshop with the people from, I teach with them, UAI instructor. So the event is one of a kind here in Berlin. It has like multiple venues in Berlin, in Düsseldorf and Köln. And yeah, it's a large one to experience it, you know, to experience like, you know, virtual production, LED walls and everything. And Katja, the owner of it, is kind enough to let us, you know, go in for it. And good things is, you know, now I see it in two ways. I saw how Unreal will look like inside of this, how we can work with it. And I saw also like how Project Arena will look like inside of it.
Yeah. How would you describe this particular offering from Chaos that we call Project Arena?
Okay, so Project Arena is basically a simplified way for for virtual production. They got it's out of the box way, meaning that you have a scene which basically in V-Ray, so you have all this library in V-Ray, and you get to use it and then just like export your own scene into Vintage, Chaos Vintage, and from there you got to get it out to your own LED walls. So this is how easy it is, basically. It's you don't need to bake it. You don't need any kind of light baking. You don't need for any optimization. You don't need to take care of your, you know, polygon or triangle account for it. So it's way more simplified and easy than Unreal Engine. And you don't need to work all the way doing in display and connecting all the dots for it. I think they are going to be like high competitor for Unreal Engine in this area. Okay. Especially that despite Fab is a large market, and V-Ray has more varied and market all over. I mean, consider, for example, like Evermotion by itself. Everybody has like, you know, location from Evermotion, at least one or two. So I think they got it their own ways, you know. Still experimental. I think there is couple of They remain that it's not going to be like, you know, going to eliminate Unreal Engine by itself. Okay. It's not the same. But I think still people who are not going to go through the complexity of Unreal Engine and the virtual production process on it, we're going to go for Project Arena.
Yeah. Yeah, I was very impressed. I love Chris. I love Chaos. I, you know, loved Total Chaos back in 2019, probably one of the best conferences I've been to. And as part of that, I got to play a lot and even show off a few things I was doing with their beta project. They called Project Lavina. Now they call it Vantage. And this is their full real-time ray tracing engine, not to be confused with like the ray tracing and Unreal Engine, which is a little bit more of a hybrid approach. It's similar to thinking about like a hybrid car that does gas and electric versus a fully electric car. So Vantage and then Project Arena by extension, is able to do a lot of things that a raster-based or a hybrid engine can't do. It can have kind of infinite polygons, and you know, you can select things, and it just, as a pure ray tracing engine, has a lot of really cool capabilities that allow you to not have to deal with all those typical game optimization hurdles. And so, by the way, just a fun fact, I think I'm still actually quoted on the Vantage website from like something I said back in 2019 about how impressive I thought their ray tracing engine was. And so it seems like, yeah, Project Arena was building on that and saying like, well, how do we take the simplicity of this full ray tracing engine we have and now apply this to virtual production? And the session that we were both at, of course, they showed ray tracing FTW, ray tracing for the win. It's wonderful, little kind of parody, tongue-in-cheek film that is actually using this to do this kind of old Western thing. And we could talk about that film for hours. There's so many great little Easter eggs in it. But then Chris, of course, gave a really excellent presentation that I thought positioned the product really well. I went into this whole thing being like, I love Chris, I love Chaos. I don't see any world where I'd be switching from Unreal Engine to using what they have right now. But he laid out a really excellent case for saying like, this isn't a replacement for Unreal Engine, but there are a number of cases where this will just be a lot simpler and a lot cleaner, and you'll need fewer staff. Yes. And you don't need to think about, you know, optimizing your scene as much. So I was impressed. I came away from the whole thing being like, you know what? I'm kind of sold on the times I would actually use this. How about you?
I know what will happen. I guess in my opinion, I mean, lots of studio nowadays is trying to shift their whole pipeline from Unreal, but still dealing with the Unreal complexity and like, you know, in building the pipeline, building the whole teams and collaboration of the whole teams. What basically is for some studio, especially Arcvist studio or CGI studio, like they do motions. Okay, we already have a pipeline that works with the V-Ray or Corona or anything. Now, if we need to use virtual production, we don't need to build everything from zero. So basically, we have everything. So we can shift it all what we build inside of Vintage. And from Vintage, we can go all the way to the market, to the virtual production. I think lots of people are going to seek this. Okay, in case they want to seek like, you know, some project they want to have virtual production. But for somebody like starting complete company or starting large pipeline, I still Unreal Engine will dominate the whole things. Because as I said, like as I described, it's a word. It encompasses a lots of area, lots of fields. And you got to get away for everything inside of it.
Yeah. Yeah, great. All right. Anything else about Project Vantage we want to say before we move on? Or Project Vantage, Project Arena, sorry. They're related.
I would love to learn about it. I would love to experience it myself and see how simplistic. I mean, from perspective, like, you know, from a far away, it's easy to see. It's easy to see what's happening in there. But once you get the dirt on it and you experience it, you got to see, okay, where's the hard part and where's the easy part? And afterward, you can put your own judgment. For now, we are putting our judgment based on what we see as a demo. They are presented for us.
Funny coincidence, in the middle of the presentation, I unfortunately had to step out of the room because I had a call with D-Box, some of our mutual friends over there. And they're like, oh, where are you right now? And I'm like, oh, I'm at this, you know, thing that Chaos is showing, you know, Project Arena and all that. And they're like, oh, we made a film for Project Arena. I think they filmed it over in like Hungary or something like that. But they made it sound too like it was a very simple process to use. Like D-Box is not an Unreal Engine house. That's why, you know, we've worked with them in the past. So they were able to take their very robust, very heavy V-Ray scenes from 3ds Max and get it up on a wall and do a shoot pretty quick. And I think that's a great testament to the
game. I mean, this is one example. For example, you know, D-Box, they shoot like lots of, you know, live action with a green screen and they, you know, combine it with bots. Now they can use it directly through LED walls. And they already have this pipeline inside of Project Arena.
Yeah, very cool. All right, let's hop to another thing we did in Berlin besides our Vietnamese sandwiches and boba, which, by the way, I was commenting on that at the beginning because I was like really excited to have a Vietnamese sandwich and some boba tea, which is a lovely combination to me. But the woman there was kind of like, oh, well, we don't really have boba. Like, I could kind of give you what's kind of sitting here. And I was like, sure. That would be a weird combination of flavors. But I thought the sandwich was pretty good. For you, it was a little bit too spicy. Yeah.
Like, we got also the experience of this immersive, like, a museum. You know, this Egyptian Tutankhamun, like, museum. I think they did, like, a, you know, good job, but still they can push more, you know, the graphics inside of it and the technology of it.
Yeah.
It feels that, okay, it's a nice place, nice way to tell a storytelling, but still, like, the types of technology that they are using, they can be more and more pushed. I mean, I'm not an expert in immersive, but from what I see from other things, it's still weak in some areas.
Agreed. So to set this up a little bit as well, I was very pleasantly surprised to see that just a couple blocks from the hotel I was staying at in Berlin, which was a very like swanky hotel, by the way, Tank had recommended I stay there. It was called the Mikhailov or something like that, the Michael something, I've already forgotten, but it was definitely the fanciest hotel I stayed at during my tour in Europe. It felt very hipster. Does it have kind of a reputation, Mama?
I mean, the area where you were staying, it's the hipster area.
Hipster area, yeah, exactly. So this museum, which I had no idea would be so close to me, just like a 5-minute walk, I went in because I thought they were just going to have a big immersive, you know, kind of like the immersive Van Gogh, immersive Disney experiences I've seen in the past. And they did have that. But I was pleasantly surprised to see that they're also doing things with virtual reality. And a funny thing was, when I came in, you know, typically at these museums, they have you give some kind of deposit or your credit card or something, especially if you're borrowing something, until you come back. And the two folks at the reception desk were so excited to hear that I ran, you know, a virtual reality studio, that what they accepted in lieu of my ID or whatever was they just let me leave my Apple Vision Pro and Quest 3 with them. So they got to play with those while I was in the experience. And there was the immersive experience, which is fine. It was almost definitely rendered in Unreal Engine. I think we both felt like it probably used a lot of like out of the box marketplace assets. So I think we were both looking at it, like, this is okay, but like we could probably do something just as good, if not better, with minimal effort. But the VR thing I thought was interesting because there were two parts. There was a VR 360 film, which to me did all the things wrong. Like things that you should not do in a VR film, because it's like twisting and turning you and like making you do all these things that are very uncomfortable against your will, because it's just the 3D360 video. But then you and I both got to go into this other experience, which is pretty much a miniaturized version of the Four Seasons project that D-Box and PureBlink and my company built out in Austin, Texas. But instead of needing to be like, you know, wireless PC and dealing with like ray tracing and all this complex stuff, this was kind of like the much cleaner, simpler version. It's like a big open space. Everyone's in VIPocus 3s. It's all running standalone. You have very simple avatar representations of everyone who's inside there. I don't think it was made in Unreal Engine. I think it was made in Unity. But I thought it was like a delightful little way for people who have not done a lot of VR, especially multiplayer VR, to get to engage with this a little bit. Yeah, what did you think?
It was more interactive way, like, you know, to get to tell a story. It was. I think from graphics side, it can be pushed way more.
Yeah.
This technology, but it was a nice, you know, representation telling story about, you know, an ancient king in Egypt. So I enjoyed it, as I said, like more than 360 video. Okay. It was cool to see how from the outside how people are running and how you can, you know, set up the whole experience by itself.
I was like, you know, people smile in VR.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with it. I'm not a VR experienced by no far, but you know, the maximum I do is panorama images. So, but from the outside, seeing the interaction, building collision, building bounded between people and their avatar, I think it was like an eye opening for more opportunities you can seek after this, especially if you are working in this arena, you know.
Yeah, exactly. And I thought there were some very clever throughput things going on there because they had like 50 headsets, which apparently all are possible to use at the same time. But the way they deal with like different groups coming in is you can have different groups starting different points in the experience. It's not like everyone needs to be at the same point of the experience at the same time. And so the only downside to that is if you see other people who aren't in your group walking around the space, you might think they're looking at a particular thing based on what you see their avatar doing in your experience, but they might actually be later on in the experience where there's something different over there.
Yeah.
You know, from a throughput perspective, I thought it was very effective.
Definitely. Definitely. It was, you know, new experience from my side.
All right. Last thing I'll say about Berlin is I loved it. I thought it was a beautiful city. I'm jealous that you live there, even though I know we're talking about some other places you might want to go to as well.
Yes.
I really enjoyed biking around the city, just kind of vibing with it. It was really
Berlin by itself, it's a vibrant, hipster-like city. You got to get everything you need to do. And especially if you are a young and married person, you know, you got to experience all those nightlife and clubs and everything. So it depends on what people need, you know. Afterwards, okay, there is still noise. I like it. I enjoy it. It's always a hometown for me. But yeah, let's see where more opportunity outside here.
Absolutely. All right. Well, this is probably a good point to rewind the clock a little bit. We still haven't like really properly introduced you and why you're so awesome and where you come from. So let's go back to like you being a kid. And what was your introduction to the great, exciting world of CG and VFX and 3D? And how did you come to get to the point? Let's go all the way through from being a kid to like getting to the point where you're living in Berlin.
Well, I started. Well, my childhood was basically based in two countries. It was based in Gulf countries, in Saudi Arabia and in Emirates. So I was in the primary school, I was like, you know, in Riyadh, and secondary and high school, I was in Dubai. Saudi Arabia at that time, it was more conservative country, extremely conservative country. It's not anymore. It's totally different countries. And so the only way we got excited is basically by sitting behind the screen, you know, playing all those video games from early age, you know, Sega Drive, Nintendo and all everything. You know, Atari. So I exposed to all the evolution of video game console. So this was the first sign for me. That's why when I got like, you know, hooked up on those areas. Okay. And beside that is in the Middle East, the Japanese anime was a huge influence in all of our childhood. Okay. So in my hometown country, I came from basically from Damascus, Syria. So and Egypt were the responsible for all the cartoon, you know, series there. So Syria is got to get to do all the dubbings for all the Japanese anime, and Egypt was doing all the dubbing for Disney shows. Okay. and it's got spread all the way inside of the Middle East. Okay. And so you got there, you got influenced by all the culture from enemies, and you got to grow up with it, basically, to get influenced with it. It's totally different from what other people like, you know, Akira and all those. No, we got like shows like, you know, Captain Tsubasa, Grandizer, Mazinger, all of those shows where you grow up and they influence your culture and they influence the way you think. And I always wanted to seek those areas in my life. After finishing, you know, after finishing my high school, I wanted, it was always the decision for me, okay, what do I need now on my real life? So arts in MENA region in general, it wasn't something that people choose to see or doesn't has like, you know, the high social respect. Still, people doesn't believe in art or especially digital art that you can make a living. The same story everybody is do. So I went back to my home country from Dubai to Damascus, and I started studying architecture, basically. So this was my first way, but I still like, you know, I have the creativity of drawing, designing, and doing all the fun stuff, you know. Construction and project management, all those are out of my arena. It's something I don't like to choose. But while I was studying, I still got hooked up in the animation. So in Syria, there was like an Indian academy that opened that is just doing like 3D animation. I started to seek it while I was studying architecture. Okay, so I'm studying architecture. You know, in architecture, we got introduced to CAD drawing, 3D Max and everywhere. But when I got there, I got hooked up more and more in this. And I start like to simultaneously studying 3D animation and studying architecture at the same time. Until 2013, when things happened, you know, or until 2011, when Arab Spring happened and all the Arab region got all the wars and all the revolution there. So for us, this was a moment where I was in a dangerous zone. And I want to find a way to get out of my country. I was finishing my study in Syria, finishing architecture, finished animation. And I was in a way to find a way to any kind of like escape ticket for me. So the escape ticket for me was a scholarship from Erasmus Mundus, where I got to go and study Master in Architecture in Berlin. So I went here, I studied Master in Architecture. I wasn't happy in this study. My way of architecture or the way I design architecture is more toward like parametricism and organic school of architecture. And in German are all clean cube Bauhaus style. So it was the contemporary of it. And I really hate every mountain. And they are focusing way more on the functionality part instead of, you know, the design part, which is the part that I hate mostly. So, but for someone who escaped war, you know, you got to finish it. It's some things, you know, this is your ticket in society coming from war-torn country. So I finished this, but at the same time, I still wanted to seek 3D. So while I'm studying, after 1 month from coming to Berlin, I sent my application for 3D visualization company called Punkon Feze. This was the first visualization company in Germany. And there they saw that I used to work in the Middle East region, and their own clients was, you know, Emaar in Dubai and all those large real estate company in Gulf area. So second day he said, like, come to here. And this is where I started working on a large scale project and start to build a real portfolio for my side in here. During my study in architecture there and doing my master and everything, there was this deep things. Okay, I was happy doing 3D and 3D animation, but there was like this deep, I wanted to do more than, you know, building and everything. So in 2014, I started to seek all those events, cool events. There was the first event I went for. It's called Animago here in nearby Berlin in Babelsberg. And then in 2015, I met one of my CGI here. And he was like, you know, visual effects supervisor in Paris. I met him. He was like Alain Mackay. And Alan is one of, you know, Rewind Emmy Award visual effects supervisor. And I always, like, you know, watch his own tutorial online. So I was one of his biggest fans. So we got to, you know, spend some time with each other and say, okay, he has like a mentorship for 1 year doing FX technical, called FXTD, FX Technical Director. And I said, okay, I will register for it while I was, like, you know, working and completing my architectural study. And then it was like a change from me also, like, to seek a visual effect. So I spent 1 year studying all Fume FX and, you know, thinking particles and all particle effects. And after that, he also, like, released another, you know, he released another program called Live FX. So it was basically live shot with effect, but on a scale of Hollywood shot. So here where I start to hook up more and more and start to build better portfolio with my low-key computer. And from there, I start to get multiple, like, you know, jobs from it. This was basically my academic background. So I have, like, you know, this digital art visual effect background, and I have this architecture background. And when I started, like, freelancing, I was doing what I got, mostly ArcVis, but also, like, I got to do, like, you know, visual effect and effect bars and 3D. And then in 2018 or 2016, I started all my own journey in the freelancing, which was okay. It was good. You know, I used to go to all those events. This was my way of networking, getting my client and everything. But 2018, I realized, okay, I'm not getting anywhere. I think I have a problem with my, you know, I'm a good artist, I'm a good designer, but I don't know how to reach more clients and everything. So I stopped for a year and a half. And I went and studied marketing and all those, what we call soft skills. Okay. So I went for a school called Akimbo Workshop. And one of my teacher, he's based in New York. He's called Seth Godin. He was the vice president in Yahoo. And he is one of the best author in marketing. So I got deep in understanding, you know, marketing and human behavior and how to network, how to negotiate and all of those. So I spent like a year and a half doing nothing but business study. And then when I get back, now I have more knowledge. Okay. And I hooked up, you know, started. This is the time when let's say when Corona started. And during Corona start, when I was seeking more and more project, everything stopped because people, you know, you don't know what to do. And this is where I start to go through education and teaching way more and more. So this is was, you know, the timeline of where I got to go from being architecture student to be now teacher and artist.
Cool. All right. Are we caught up?
Yeah.
That's great. Now, I want to loop in some of these opportunities to talk about the people that we both know. How did you come across CG Architect for the first time, and how did you meet Jeff Model?
This is also like when I started the freelancing, I wanted to reach out people more in ArcVis arena. And I heard about, you know, D2 conference, and I was, okay, CG Architect was for us the first place to go. And through CG Architect, I got to know, okay, the founder was Jeff Motel. And Jeff is kind enough, to be honest, for even with a stranger. So I got to message him in Facebook. And he replied to me, like, I was asking him for advice, where can I know more of these people? And he advised me to go to D2, actually. And he said, like, okay, I'm also, like, going for THU, which coincidentally, we were together. Right. And they're like, okay. And then he normally doesn't add people. Then he added me. And 2 months later, we were knowing each other, like, you know, in D2 at the beginning. Then a month ago afterward, we see each other in THU. And through this, we build like this good friendship. Okay. You know, we always meet because we go back and forth to THU and D2. So we always meet in there. But what we get to get better for us is basically when Corona happened, me, him, and Nikos from Creative Lighting and from Arcanine, As I said, I was into this all business ideas and everything. So one of the things was doing mastermind. So I reached out to them, okay, would you like to make a mastermind? You know, we help each other. Everybody was starting the business during Corona, and we help each other, and we give idea. Everybody like has like, you know, 20 minutes talking about his business, where he struggle, and we get to advise him. And then we had it like we run it for a couple of sessions, but we stop because everybody is busy. But this is also like we get more and more knowing each other.
Yeah, amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, he is missed, to be honest, now from all, like, you know, Arcvis events. So he is now in a different...
Working on video.
Yeah.
Two things come to mind with you telling us to one. First of all, shout out also to Nikos Nikolopoulos, who runs Creative Lighting and is amazing. And you also reminded me, of course, that you had brought him to the Dark Matter exhibit in Berlin, which I also got to go to on your recommendation, which I loved. And similar to how I think we were watching the circus performance in Berlin, wondering, like, how would you capture this? And, you know, what would be an interesting way to bring this into a virtual world? I was going through the whole Dark Matter exhibit, which is all these really cool light physical installations with crazy, you know, things moving around and all that. I was also thinking the whole time, like, yeah, how would you do this with, like, Niagara particles? So that's a natural thing to happen.
They have a new installation now. Last week, they announced it for the winter session.
Just missed it. Yeah. It's really cool. And like a lot of it's just fun and tactile, like a step ladder that you get different like Ableton samples from and that kind of thing. So Nikos is amazing. I took his masterclass in New York City and I have stayed in touch with him ever since. He's a tremendous master of lighting and studies film and art and all these different great resources. And his passion comes through so well in all of his lessons. And I don't want to spill too many beans about like what I know he's up to, but we will get him on this podcast probably sometime in the next year, and we'll dive more into his very exciting.
It would be also like I got my relationship with Nikos, like, you know, started like also like online, and then through this mastermind that we this initiative, and afterward, you know, we got to meet each other. I was in Dubai and he was coincidentally just like starting to explore in Dubai. And he said like, okay, I'm doing a masterclass. Would you like to try? And I went for his masterclass. Okay. And then I saw him multiple times. I saw him in Greece. I saw him. He came to Berlin. We saw each other. So yeah, he's a really nice guy. And most importantly, he's one of the best instructors related to lighting and CGI.
Absolutely. Yeah. You and I both as educators ourselves, I think, can appreciate just how talented Nikos is at teaching other people. And he makes it seem so effortless. It just flows out of him as though he was just born to do this.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, this is one thing related to education in some way, like, you know, there is a great artist, but they don't know how to teach.
Mm-hmm.
And there is also teacher, but they don't have, like, you know, this skills or experience in life. But Nikos has like already like formal experience of the education, and he know how to teach. He know how to have this balanced learning cycle between, you know, give telling theories, and his theories, he tell it in a storytelling way. So it's not boring. It's not like formative. And then he showed you like his own demos, and you got to do all his practical stuff afterward. So it's like a balanced way of teaching for him.
Really, really incredible. I also love the fact that he's from Greece, because my mother's side of the family is from Greece. So we've been able to bond over that. And someday I'll go visit him in Athens or somewhere else over there. I also want to take a quick opportunity to shout out Jeff, because I don't think he's actually come up on the podcast before. But Jeff has been a tremendous influence on my career, not just because of CG Architect, which I probably joined in like 2006 or 2007. But I met Jeff for the first time at Oculus Connect, one of these XR events, and made absolutely no impression on him. I was like, oh my God, you're the founder of CG Architect. So cool. And like, I don't think he remembered anything from our conversation. But then in 2017, he was put in charge by Autodesk to curate this very future-facing track at Autodesk University in Las Vegas. And he had seen a YouTube video I made where I took a sketch I'd done in Tilt Brush and kind of brought that over to Unreal Engine and turned it into a full project. And he found me and contacted me and said, hey, I'd love for you to be a speaker at this event. And it was the first time I ever got to, I was treated very, very nicely by a company who really wanted me to give a good talk at their event, because this was Autodesk University and my registration was paid for. They took care of my flight and my hotel and they gave me like a per diem, like money to spend every day. And I was still like, you know, a bright-eyed, bushy-tailed kind of kid who was still kind of new to this world. My company was pretty fresh. And Jeff was such a great mentor through that entire time in Vegas. And then very quickly became like an advocate. Like he would tell people, you know, hey, if you're trying to do something virtual reality, like go talk to Alex. And I can even directly credit him with the Four Seasons project, because he vouched for me talking to Matthew Bannister, D-Box. Matthew didn't really know who I was, but Jeff was like, oh yeah, this guy knows what he's doing, and helped connect all those dots for making that project happen. Then, you know, I've seen Jeff in everywhere from Singapore to Venice at like immersive architecture conferences that he, again, was someone who advocated on my behalf to say, hey, you should have Alex speak at this. So, you know, tremendous gratitude to toward Jeff and everything he's done for the community.
Yes. To be honest, I think he helped the majority of you know, ArcFest people. You know, he is like this impresario guy that he connect the dot for everybody. And he always like shout out to you whenever the topics is VR. I remember that multiple times, like he talked about Alex. You know, Jeff, as for you, as for me, he did a lot, and we always like appreciate, and he is missed from this community. And still I try each and while to connect with him. I mean, he's a great guy. He always has this experience that he's got to learn from it. And he is, most importantly, he is kind enough. Like, you know, if something he can help you, he will do it.
Yeah, really, really amazing. Love Jeff. Speaking again of all these circles that we're both traveling in, tell me a little bit about D2, because Fabio and Jason, who have run it, Fabio, of course, just recently stepped down. This was an event that I was always trying to go to. I love both of those guys. I've seen them at other events. I was on Fabio's YouTube show, you know, early on in my career as well. And D2 always sounded like such a blast. You've been. Tell me a little bit about what that's like.
D2 is also like, for people who doesn't know what D2 basically is, the largest convention for ArcFest communities. So Fabio, Christian, and Jason try to build like a hub for ArcFest people. Like, you know, most of the events are basically CGI or digital art or drawing, but just related for ArcFest, this was the first initiative. I think it was from Fabio and the teams. It's great. I mean, they did like a great job, but you see it, you see the development each and year. And I'm really good friend with Fabio, and you know, sad because he stepped out from it. The things is, you also like, it's not different from THU or Unreal Fest, but still you got like this family vibes, this friendship people where you got to hang out afterwards. And what's cool is, despite the fact that they got influenced in during Corona times, they got to complete with the community by doing these weekly challenges, doing all those interview. Even if somebody like, you know, he's unknown, they try to reach out to him, like doing like an interview with him or shout out to other people. So also like they try to connect the dot with, you know, with the talent, with the people, and with all those companies. Like, it wasn't amazing. I went like twice, but also like they did like small workshop in the name of D2, like, you know, business workshop with the Christo. I was there for also. It's a great event. It's recommended. It got different. So I would say like the first 5 years, you see like the same faces, and now you have a different generation of artists, people, because now it's easy to formulate ArcFest companies, and they are overly saturated. So they all the gang, you don't see it anymore, but you see new generation, which is cool still.
Yeah, that's really cool. All right, and then let's keep circling back around as long as we're talking about these events. What did you think of Unreal Fest over in Prague this year, back in June? Have you been to an Unreal Fest before?
No, Unreal Fest in Prague was my first Unreal Fest, and to be honest, it was cool. It was amazing. I guess Epic Games did great jobs, and this is a different event from the normal event, because most of the event are focused on, you know, on the artist, on the designer or company. This was focused on the technology itself. Okay, so everybody from companies, artists, they have the same passion on learning Unreal Engine and other software like Twinmotion. I guess they did amazing job. I think because it was like in middle of the city, so people, when they are bored, they got to go outside. But the talks was impressive. The vibe was good. They treat us really well with the food and the location, to be honest. Really well. I didn't expect this. This is the first event that, you know, the host is treating you that well, even if you are not speaker, which was really great. The end party was amazing, you know, with the, you know, going to this epic club inside of Prague.
Really called epic.
Yeah, yeah. And have all the food, the music. It was amazing ending for it. I think, as I said, like people are in the same passion, but I guess it the idea of networking happened basically either in the eating time or the lunchtime, dinner time. This was most of the time people are surrounding around here and there. Okay, so it's not you didn't get to connect with a lot of people. You got with your own gang that you came with most of the times. But I guess in form of organization and treatment and everything is one of the best.
Yeah, agreed. I think Epic Games treats everyone really well at these events.
I mean, I don't know, but you have been to the original one, basically. You all got to tell the difference between, you know, the small Unreal Fest and the main Unreal Fest. So what was your experience like, you know, different between them?
Yeah, there's pros and cons to the different ones. You know, Seattle was huge. There are like so many people there. And there's people who I'm, you know, good friends with, like Samantha Anderson, that I like would keep seeing across the hallway and like never actually get a chance to go chat with her for the whole time we're there. Whereas at Unreal Fest Prague, like I felt like I know everyone. I felt like I got to know everyone who was there because there was something like 800 of us and we're all like in that, you know, Hilton atrium. Everything was so close together. So it was intimate. It had like an intimacy to it that I really loved. So it's kind of like the difference between, you know, I'm thinking about a particular music artist I know who does living room concerts and then they do like regular concerts. And the living room concerts, which I've been to before, are like very intimate, of course. And it's like, it's a totally different vibe. But the larger concerts are really cool too, because it's more epic, more of a spectacle. So I think they both have value, but I was really happy to be invited over to just speak at Unreal Fest Prague. And
the people got to know each other, like, you know, because lots of YouTubers that they were there. So like familiar face, LinkedIn faces, they are familiar. So you got to go and talk to them. This was an easy part. But in general, as I said, like from my experience from different events, I think there was like, you know, cut in the connection between people. Like, you know, I think if it's extended more than 3 days and more isolated, like not in the center of the city, people got to know each other more and more. And you have a different types of companies, you know. So people are interested in automotive, people are interested in architecture, in cinematic. So not everybody has the same interest to talk to you.
But we're all using the same tools. And so I thought there was something really cool about watching an automotive talk or talking to someone in, you know, a different industry from you. And you realize like you're both trying to like find like the right CVAR, or you're getting the same kind of like bug with Lumen or whatever. And there's still kind of this, I think, general sense of, you know, the rising tide raises all boats and everyone does want to help each other. So that's just a general spirit that I really appreciate at these events.
Cool.
Speaking of that and like trying to make sure everyone does the best work they can, let's talk a little bit more about education. How did you become an authorized instructor for Unreal Engine and how's that been going so far?
This was, to be honest, by coincidence. So I was in 2018, I started my teaching journey. So because I was in freelancing and starting this startup, I support myself doing teaching. So I was teaching 3ds Max in animation academy called Wave Academy. And I was also like teaching BIM in another school. So I built this experience in teaching, you know, and I was teaching in English and as well as in German. So I was confident teaching. So in late 2021, a guy called Stefan Otten, he is basically the first premium Unreal Training Center. And they are located nearby Düsseldorf. And they reach out to me. They write me, would you like to be an instructor on Unreal Engine? So we are building these teams. We are building a team of instructors in Germany. And we got this contract doing Summer of Unreal. So they got like, you know, this this deal with Unreal, with Epic Game to do Unreal Engine, Summer of Unreal. So inside of like 3 months, I went and I studied Unreal Engine from nothing. So we don't, I mean, the same process for 3D, this is software, but I was always like a 3ds Max guy. So we went, they did like what we call train the trainer. So to prepare us. So we got to be prepared. We got did like train the trainer. And then what we did is basically everybody started to study. And then we need to do like, you know, the exam. So we did the exams. We passed it. And, you know, we passed our evaluation. I got to be a trainer. But one thing is, was with the deal that because it was a premium center, you need to be like on a higher level of training. So you cannot be accepted in a lower grade. So you got to study, you got to write, you know, deliver a great lecture. And back in the days, it's different now. Back in the days, you need to do like 2 live lectures. So one in any topic for Unreal and one was in blueprinting. And for someone who doesn't do any kind of programming, this was an issue, you know. Sometimes you do programming, you understand it, but deliver it for people, it was always like a hardcore work. You need to deal with it. So I learned it, I did it. And 3-4 months, we got to be certified. But back then, there wasn't any kind of, you know, badging system. We got certified. And after 2 months, it was like in June, they did like, you know, summer of Unreal. In June or July, they did like summer of Unreal. So I got not to be the guy who do the curriculum design, but I got to be the guy who was on Discord for, you know, helping other groups. So summer of Unreal was this bootcamp event, like financed by an Epic Game that we designed in Incas bank center. And it was 500 we need to deal with them. So we were like around 10, 12 instructor. We got splitted and everybody like, you know, got their own topic that he's comfortable on helping other people. So we got on those channels, go inside and helping. And then because it was, you know, it was successful. Normally German do good organization and do good works. So Epic Games said like, okay, we like what you have been doing. We will do another deal. And they did what we call EMEA initiative for 22. So they want to expand the user inside of EMEA region. And they said like, but can you get this 4-week bootcamp and compress it in 1 week? Okay. So we got compressed in 1 week. And so each instructor, so got reached out to each instructor and said like, can you teach groups? We need to teach 500 people. So every instructor got to learn everything. And for me or for other people, like, you know, you are comfortable with some area, but you are not comfortable with everything. It was like virtual, you know, it was animation boot camps. So you got now to prepare yourself to teach 10 sessions, basically each session for 3.5 hours. And you are teaching like people, and you got people like, you know, for artists from Double Negative and electronic art and everything. So you cannot be like, you know, unconfident instructor. So this is where you got to do lots of hard work, you know, teaching those people. So I got to do it multiple times. Okay, first time was still good. But then when I repeated multiple times, this is where I got like, okay, now I got advanced and advanced in this. And afterward, I started like, you know, for the same training center, I start to do like curriculum, I design curriculum architecture. And suddenly like beginning, you know, let's say ending last year or mid last year, I start to reach out from, I start to get more reach from people in LinkedIn. So there is B license in Sweden training center. There is also like a Vertex School in Austin, in Texas. They reach out to me. This is where was the hardcore for my teaching. And it was basically, they said like, would you like to teach a gaming program? So when it's gaming, it was a gaming art. I said, okay, but it turned out it was gaming development and I engaged myself in a weird place that I know, you know, as a trainer, I can teach them fundamental of blueprinting. But when it was gaming development, this is where I got a lot deep inside of blueprinting because it was in a, on triple A level. So you need to learn about damaging system, tracing system, all you know, building UI for a gaming, connecting everything. This is where I got to do it multiple times and I got really deep and it was pre-launched, you know, program. So it was great journey. It was influenced a lot of my skills inside of my Unreal Engine. And later, also last year, I reached out by Epic themselves. Okay, so we got, because we are premium center, we got to train from them on NDA project. And then they got me themselves, and now I am, you know, educational advisor of NDA stuff. So this was basically how I went inside of Unreal. And I hooked up. And since then, I started working for magazine. So you have this online magazine like CG Circuit. Basically, they have similar to Gnomon Workshop. I start building for them like series around world building fellowship, world buildings. And then we have also like Pact Publishing. This, they do like book publishing. I was technical viewer for them. And many of them like reached out to a level where the industry start to collapsing and start the work, you know, get slower and slower. So we'll see now. I have different plan for the next year, but we will see how it is. But this is how I got, you know, being working closely with Epic Game is got me to understand the ecosystem of how Unreal work, of what Epic really wants from how the user or how the instructor wants to teach. Okay, because, you know, as we said, like there is always a difference between a good instructor and bad instructor. And now doing this rating system, you start, you know, people start to seek now, okay, I need to get advanced and advanced in my badging.
Yeah, that makes a ton of sense. And so one thing I really like about being an instructor is it kind of forces me to stay on top of things as well, because if I'm about to teach a class to a group and it's a subject that I'm not super well versed in, like it's going to force me to kind of get better at that. That being said, when a new version of Unreal Engine comes out, say 5.5, for example, I do find that I have a little bit of a mixed sentiment where I'm excited. But then when I think about like the teaching perspective, it's like, oh man, people are going to ask me like, what are the best new features? Like what's really exciting? They want to see like quick tips and everything for that. How are you feeling about 5.5, and how do you generally feel when there's some big new release for Mac?
Each release is an overwhelming because it's not like one or two changing. Okay, it's different. When you talk, for example, about this, okay, you know, like they did like one or two things. You got to manage it. But Epic Game is amazing how they do it in all multiple areas. So you cannot focus. So they have an animation, they have a lighting, they have a rendering and everything. So it's always a mixed overwhelming feeling, but it's also like it forces you because you have this title or it's basically it's a responsibility, and it what gets you like more jobs. So you need to, you know, to preserve it. And at the same time, you need to influence yourself and force yourself, you know, to learn. And I found the best way in learning any skills basically is teaching. You know, in learning pyramid, like always teaching is the best methodology. You got to do it practically and you got to, you know, to teach it for the other and see if people like, you know, understand it as you understand it. So any version is overwhelming from Epic Game, but it's always the same excitement because you can see, okay, not on an instructor level, but also like on a personal service level. Okay, I can use this new technology. I can go for it. Today, for example, like, you know, this exciting mega light, mega light and the enhancement of, you know, rendering in hard tracing. This is for somebody who works in larger scale, like, you know, Arcvis. This is one of the better because now it's matching what's happening in Vira. It's matching what's happening in Corona. So now I can build the whole scene, I can use all those features from Megalight, from Nainat and everything, and I got my job done. So it's also like an exciting thing. It simplified your own workflow. It's a future, but you got to spend lots of time in, you know, seeing what's happening and experimenting and happening. I got to a point if I feel comfortable if somebody asks me some things, say, let me look at it. I don't know about it. You know, some people like get embarrassed and some people like really shy, but no, it's fine if you are an instructor and somebody popped up a weird question to say, like, let me see what's happening in here. You know, it's cool.
Yeah. cool. Amazing. Well, let's talk a little bit about what we're looking at behind you. We've had this lovely screensaver for the whole session. And for our audio only listeners, let's try to also be very descriptive as we pop over to a little bit of a screen share here.
I mean, this is basically is let me open it. This is basically a project I'm doing with a friend of mine. So we are two people. This is everything is in here. Mostly are handmade modeling. So we are not depending on marketplace. We have a couple of kit bashing, but what we are doing here is we are trying to push Unreal and see how two people can manage to do, like, you know, larger scale project. So what we are seeing here is basically an imitation of Baghdad city in its golden era in 760 AD. So this was it. It was basically this circle rounded city. And coincidentally, like, you know, Assassin's Creed Mirage is doing the same, you know. So, but we did like a different version on it. It's basically to see how much we can push Unreal. We are still using the old level system. We are not using a world partitioning system. But what happened here with me basically is, you know, is that day I was thinking, would it be cool if I can took all this scene and get it inside of Fortnite using, you know, UEFN and transform it to be like one of the levels that you can play it in Fortnite system and see how much you need to optimize and see how much you can, you know, push for. But in general, this is basically it's a scene just for experimental scene, me and one friend of mine.
Very cool. Can you explain also why you didn't opt for world partition?
It was a mistake from my colleague. He just like imported all of it from Datasmith. So because it was already done in Datasmith and it's already done in one level, so there was a mistake from our side. But in general, it's still working. I mean, still a huge, but still working in one level. The thing is, where we have now a problem is, you know, optimization skills, you know.
Right.
It's basically work on low frame per second, I guess. If I'm not mistaken, it's still 14 frames per second. So I have lots of technical work to do, you know, decreasing ink, decreasing all the texture, you know, lighting system. Now we can hear, for example, one of the things that we can experimental is our mega light idea is to see, okay, we have all the city is going to be all enlightened. We have tremendous amount of light. How will this work out in here? So, as I said, it's an experimental way just for us to see and to see where we can push.
How detailed are we? Can you zoom in really close to any particular part?
I mean, all details here.
Yeah, wow.
Woo-hoo. I mean, it's built generally in 3ds Max, Substance Painter, and then came from here. But in general, it's all details, everything's from inside and outside. So it's not basically, even in here, people think that it just basically dropped out. No, it's not dropped out. It's, you see, like, you know, you see an alley, you see, like, you know,
it's all there.
Marketplaces, you see, like, you know, construction areas. And Iraq was famous for this rounded minaret here. So we worked on it. And we still, there is a lot of working, you know, having those small asset decals, peoples that we try to do. So, yeah, it's experimental project, but it's like something that we got busy with it. And you got a lot of, you know, cinematic picture from it. Something's for our portfolio.
Yeah. And do we have a real-time directional in here? Like if you hold Control L on your keyboard and move your...
No, we are using Ultra Dynamic Sky.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah.
I mean, we are using Ultra Dynamic Sky. That's why, but still, I mean, I can work with it. So if we go in. So.
Let's make rain.
Make it. No, I don't think we have a wizard system. What I have here, just like the.
Oh, I thought the Ultra Dynamic Sky system is full of all sorts of weather.
Yeah, but you need the other plugins. So you have ultra dynamic weather. So let me hear this. I guess if I'm not mistaken, our blueprint, we have here our weather system. So I can go and I can run it. Hopefully not explode it.
By the way, what are the specs of the computer you're on?
I have AMD 32 core, Threadripper, and I have like 128 gigaram, 3090 Ti
nice.
As an RX.
There we go.
Okay, now it's raining. Now it's raining, and you know,
yeah,
you got to sleep in a different mood.
Different mood. When I was in architecture school, I spent way too much time, I'm sure my professors would tell you, way too much time trying to show my designs at different seasons, because I'm very much a fan of like how architecture and cities and buildings feel different depending on weather and snow and, you know, lighting and all that. And I always wanted to showcase like, well, you know, we can't just take this one snapshot in time. We have to show what it's like all year round. And they'd be like, well, Alex, I think you should have spent more time on the actual design compared to all these different ways to visualize it. This is what happens, right?
It's absolutely amazing. And to be honest, like, you know, from somebody who working like in a 3ds Max or even like, you know, BIM software or CAD software, is everything is a cubic. So you don't see that, you see it in real time. You don't see the light. You don't see the behavior of the material. So one power things is unreal. It is the capability of taking a large scene, like really a city, and you can just walk around, see it, put some characters and you know, have this feeling how things will happen. So nowadays you see this, it's popped up in the market. There's the whole idea of digital twinning. So people now from ArcVis side seeking, okay, you got to get Cesium, you got to get the whole cities, and you got to get to your own buildings, and you have ultra dynamic sky. So you have all the possibility to determine how is your own design, how is your ideas will going to be implemented in world real life.
Yeah, 100%. Well, this is really fun. What a cool project. Thank you for showing this off. As we begin to wrap up the episode, we've already touched, of course, on quite a few people that we both admire, but Mahmoud, anyone else that comes to mind that you would like to give a shout out to? Who's inspiring you?
I will give a shout out to my visual effect mentor. Okay, Alan McKay. Alan McKay has a large influence on my career. He is not just my mentor, he's a great friend from mine. And we got this THU to hang out after 7 years of, you know, cookout. So Alan is not just all, he taught me like, you know, art, but the way he deal with his own business, the way he connect with people who have an influence on the society, he something's to learn from, something's to take it as you know, as a model and to implement it for your own work. You know, so aside from that, as a friend, he is tremendous, like good friends. And we got, you know, to hang out. He's from Australia originally. So you get to see the other lands, how their culture and everything. So yeah, he is one of the biggest influence. Another biggest influence, just two of them, is not from CGI, but my business teacher. He's called Seth Godin, and he did let me think differently. We are good. There's a lots of good artists. There's a lots of good designer, but they don't know how, they are mistaken on how to run their own businesses. Thinking that just like, you know, get your portfolio out there, this is it. And it's not. It's a different idea, different way of thinking of people, understanding people from, you know, psychography way, thinking how to be like, you know, quarter of an inch different from anybody else inside of your work. He was one to go. He taught me a lot.
Yeah.
Those two are the biggest influence in all my career. And to be honest, Seth Godin, I didn't get to get like 101, you know, mentorship. What's cool is I was studying this, his own workshop. And the workshop was in a system of discussion group, okay? So he has like a videos, and then you have this form and, you know, like a blogging form. And so he popped up with the assignment. So you have to answer the assignment related to your own business, and everybody will comment on you. So everybody get advice. So you have like 100 of people advising you, everybody from a different, you know, field, and you got to see, okay, does people, what you are saying, cope out with the people? And so you see different perspective. You learn from this different perspective because you are commenting, you are giving advice and everything. And the more you do, you engage with the people, the more first Julian. And it got me also, like you said, like, okay, you are doing a great job. Would you like to be an assistant for us? So I said, now, okay, I will be assistant for us. So I started like to be an assistant teaching, like, you know, businessing and marketing. And then I got assigned for a group. And one of the group was like, you know, head of luxury department in Dior. And I said, like, what do I need to teach you? What do I need to coach you? You are already like 20 years head of department. So you got a lot from people. And it starts to differentiate your own thinkings. It's always weird for us in our industry that we think just on our you know, on our field, on what we are doing. But running a studio, running business is way different. And one thing I would like to tell people is, like, go to conferences, events. This is where you got to meet people and got to, you know, to engage with people. You know, you have to break this introvert part. You have to break this shyness and start to talk from this one to other one to other one. This is where I got to get to, you know, meet all those great artists. At the beginning, I would say it's intimidating. You know, you are a fan of that person, but after a while, okay, fine. We got to be a friends, and I got, you know, to get his contact, and I got to get and ask him about my portfolio and give me an advice, okay, where to seek and everything, you know. So this was my best way, I mean, way in dealing with my works and having like an inspirational mentor. Another things I would like to say is I remain like a mentor. Not everybody has an access for mentor, okay? So mentor, you know, every 2,000 people need one mentor, like, you know, it's not an easy. But one thing you'd like, and I learned it from my mentor, and said, like he said, like, seek heroes. So if you are a hero or fan of somebody, go study his work, listen to his podcast, listen to his old interview, understand his way of working, and then you will have like a mentor for life. And you got to learn from what he's doing and what he's doing without having, you know, one-on-one access. So this is my, you know, my growth way of living.
I love it. That's fantastic. Great advice. Any other, you already kind of are hitting on this, but any other advice, thoughts you'd give to young up-and-coming creators trying to find their way in this crazy old world?
Don't get intimidated with the AI.
That's a good one.
Still people need you. I mean, it's frightened. I think, in my opinion, you won't also like to touch on AI. Even if you are a good artist, okay, you need to find a way to implement inside of your own workflow. But don't get afraid that you missed out the opportunity, because, you know, our types of work, our type of creativity is something's always not just as a work, give you a pleasure to do it. You know, it's deep creativity within us, and finding that a machine can do our works, it's sad by itself, but it's also like give you another opportunity. So don't be intimidated with what's happening now in here. You know, still you have other areas. Still you have other places. And another things I would like to tell you people, like, don't stuck on one market. Okay, yeah. So don't stuck on one market. I mean, if, for example, now Europe is suffering, don't stuck here. You can seek everywhere else. If you can, go and seek everywhere else. Now, a biggest example now is China, when they released this Black Myth Wukong game, if you saw it.
Yeah.
In Unreal Engine. This is like just a statement to say, like, okay, we are competitor for what's happening in US, what's happening in Europe. You can go in there. So, and you always a new market is happening. Go seek it. Don't like stop. And because we do 3Ds, so if you don't find a work in architecture, you still have to find a work in automotive, you still find a work in different fields. So please don't be one side mind.
Absolutely. And I feel that very deeply. Like, I would not have my career be where it is if I hadn't found this interesting intersection of like architecture and like live theater and emerging tech like VR. It helps if people can think of you as dominating a smaller market as opposed to being very, very good in a much broader market that there's a lot more competition in.
I mean, one thing is different is, you know, it's type of personality. So, from branding statement, it's good to be specialized in one thing. So people know you for that one thing, but it feel afterward, you keep doing the same things, there is no much room for enhancement. So my type of person, I don't like to be in comfort zone for the long time. So I always like see different things, you know. Part of it this year, I got reached out by you know, doing virtual production. So for commercial, for Netflix, for everything. So it's good way. It's the same methodology, open mind, but, you know, different field, different types of clients.
Yeah. Yeah, I hear you. All right. Well, where can people find you, Mahmood, if they would like to reach out and say hi?
The best way to find me is on LinkedIn. I'm actively on LinkedIn. So I think this is the best way to reach out to me. I'm doing now rebranding for my company. So I have a secret project for them next year. So that's why my all my website, social media is closed. But the best way to reach out to me is basically on LinkedIn.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that secret project. It's very mysterious the way you have it listed on your LinkedIn.
It's still not even listed on my LinkedIn. No. But my LinkedIn, to be honest, I update. No, it's not on LinkedIn.
I was looking at what you have listed as consultant agreement under NDA, which I guess actually that says it's for Epic Games. Yeah.
Epic Games signed me like 20 pages. So.
Wow. Yeah.
20 pages of data privacy and everything. So I cannot pronounce it. No, but it's a different types of project I'm working on. Hopefully by beginning next year, it will going to be released.
Nice.
And it's going to be a different, it's going to be a different curve in my career. So it's going to be shifted from where I am in Germany, also to another country. So we'll see.
Very exciting. Well, cool. What a lovely chat. So great to catch up and go even beyond the lovely social experiences we got to have in Berlin and over in Prague. The way we like to end the podcast now, if we can use our tech wizardry to make this happen, we're going to try to do a high five. Do you think we can do it?
High five.
Let's see.
How did it?
We just got to like coordinate exactly the right rotation.
My hand is here, but...
Yeah, oh. Right. So it's...
You know...
Get us doing
this one.
Right.
There we go.
I think I have to stop here because I'm at the edge of my camera and then you come hit me.
I'm trying, but this is the limitation.
Forward. Closer. There we go. Great. We did it.
Perfect.
Fantastic. Thanks, Mahmood. We'll be in touch. Talk more soon. And thanks again for coming on the Unofficial Unreal Engine podcast.
Thank you.